Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Heck.
Of course. I am a blue Skype. Yeah, there we are. Yes. The iconic voice of Esther Lynn did several seconds ago welcome you to a historic edition of Between the Links here on MMAfighting.com. It has been a crazy week with big news and game-changing announcements. And we also have decided to change the game a little bit on this program, the ultimate proving ground in the world of MMA media this week. It will not be your typical one-on-one matchup. It is two-on-two. It is a tag team extravaganza. We haven't done this before. I have no idea how this is going to go. It will probably just be utter chaos, I'm sure, but that's sort of the premise of the show to begin with. So let us get into this. Let us introduce the teams first, the pairings. Let's start with the duo who helped make this concept a reality. When they battled it out on the show around a month ago against each other, coming out of the red corner. First, let us say hello to podcaster and writer extraordinaire. I guess we can now call her Mrs. Fernanda Praches. How are you? How is married life? Welcome back.
Hello, it's the same as the other life, but hearing the word married, it's still intense, strong word, heavy, but I'm doing okay. I'm a little nervous, not gonna lie. I feel like these the dynamics we have going on here, several ways in which this can go terribly wrong, but we'll see.
And they probably will, but we'll all go down together as joining Fernanda in this venture, the wily BTL veteran, fiery hot takes galore. He's been calling for this matchup for weeks and weeks, and now it's happening. From MMAfighting.com, Mr. Jed Meshew. How's it going, my friend?
I'm not going to lie. It stings to be just known as a wily veteran because I maintain that I'm still a champion, frankly. Look, it's unfair. I'm not even going to talk about the current champion because she's just too good. So we have to put her in a category of her own, and then I'm the actual champion of the mere mortals, and I'm super excited to be able to lift Nanda Pratis up here with me so she can also be a BTL champion and, frankly, have the best thing that's happened to her this month happen.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And now introducing their opponents. Coming out of the blue corner first, making his first BTL appearance as a member of the MMA Fighting Squad. He's been here before. He was even part of the BTL 50 Gauntlet several weeks ago. And when I approached him with this yesterday, it took him a mere couple seconds to accept this this idea, this concept. Let us welcome back the man, Sean Alshadi. How are you, sir?
I am doing wonderful. It is so good to be back. It's so good to be part again of the MMA Fighting team. Be home. I'm excited for this. I'm not really sure where this rivalry started. All of a sudden, I was getting called out by Jed Meshew for this for weeks on end. He has nothing better to do with this time. And honestly, it's a little unfair that you're pitting me against my former teammate, Fernanda Pratch, over there, because she's fantastic. And I don't want to do anything wrong to her. This is putting me in a weird spot. But regardless, Jed, you're going down.
And his partner, another BTL veteran, another Arizona native. He is fired up for this occasion, as expected, from MMAfighting.com. The host of the A-Side Live Chat, Mr. Jose Youngs. What's going on, man?
I also don't know where this rivalry came with. I also think it's not fair that Fernanda is on Jed's team because everyone likes Fernanda and everyone hates Jed. So I think Jed just wants some reason for someone to say any sort of positivity his way. It would be something else if he brought in my actual rival in Niall McGrath, but he's kind of busy writing his dissertation comparing Raisin Bran and Wheaties, so he's a little busy. Instead, Jed is here. He's taken time away. He's wiped his hands from the sticky Rolos that his life is centralized around. So whatever, we're here to do whatever this is, and Jed is going to lose. And Fernanda, I'm sorry that you're attached to the hip at someone that I don't think anyone really has anything positive to say. On the internet, that is. So let's do it.
All right. Now, I know chaos will ultimately rule in this matchup, but there are a couple of rule changes I would like to throw out there in the spirit of keeping the show moving in as effective of a manner as possible. So here's how it's going to work. In each round, one member of each team will respond to the question, and then it will flip-flop. So, for instance, if Jed and Jose answer the question in round one, Fernanda and Sean will answer the question in round two. However, the other rule for regulation that we are going to put in place, should the tag team partner of the individual answering the question just be losing their minds, wanting to respond at the opposing team, we will allow one rebuttal per team throughout regulation. So Fernanda and Sean are battling it out, and Jed is like, I do not agree with Sean at all. He could jump in and say rebuttal and respond to Sean. However, Jose will have the chance to respond to Jed. So one rebuttal per team throughout regulation. Use them wisely. The other rule change is in the final round. If it gets that far, all four players will have 60 seconds to answer the question, and it is a doozy. I know it's a lot. Any questions from the panel before you get going? I will walk you through everything if needed, but is there any questions from the panel?
This is like the PFL rules to me. Like, yeah. I don't fully understand it, but like, I'll just go with it and we'll see where it takes us.
It's the same game you played before, but you just have to answer half the amount of questions.
Okay. And you're partnered with me instead of against me, so you're going to win.
I think aren't you the person with the most losses in the history of the show?
And the most wins. Look, I'm a home run hitter, Sean. Like, they don't pay me to get walks.
Okay. All right, so Jed and Fernanda won the blind draw before we hit record. So you guys have to decide who's going to go first.
The two of us?
Yes.
No, Jed, you go first. I feel like I need to watch to master in action before.
Okay.
Before right. stepping in.
Let's talk about Anderson Silva.
Okay.
Although, I'm sorry. See, you're already regretting calling me, but then that means I get to answer the following question.
You answer question two, yes.
No, let me do Anderson and rep Brazil.
Cool. Go for all that. Right. I like that better because I didn't actually watch him box the pants. I was about to make up some stuff. So sweet. It works.
Full transparency. All right. Who wants to go up against Fernanda in the first round? Jose or Sean?
Jose, I'll do it.
All right. So we got Fernanda versus Sean Alshadi. So we're going to begin with Anderson Silva and what he did this past Saturday. He takes on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. in the boxing ring. And man, the spider was flowing out there. It was actually amazing to see the old Anderson come out. He was having fun. He was calling Chavez Jr. to the corner and pointing to the ground. It was awesome. And then he wins a split decision in a fight that should not have been a split decision, but it was a clear win for anybody watching the fight for the former longtime UFC middleweight champion. So, Fernanda, we're going to begin with you. What did you think of the Spider's performance and his return to the boxing ring?
Yeah, I don't. So that's the thing. Full disclosure, I don't understand a lot about boxing. Like, I'll watch it, but I don't really understand scoring that well. So I can speak for what I saw from Anderson in like I'm going to say his name five different ways, guys. Anderson, my Brazilian way. I can speak for what I saw Anderson do. On kind of a personal level. And I think it was a joy for everyone, right? I don't know. It didn't feel like there was much of a buildup to the fight, at least on my end. It didn't feel like people were that excited or even like that aware that it was happening. I for sure wasn't that excited. It was kind of like, oh, of course I'm going to watch it. But like, and then to watch him halfway through the fight really grow into his own and just do Anderson Silva things, right? Because that's the magic of it. And to look so freaking happy doing it, right? That to me was the main takeaway from it. And honestly, what I thought was really, you know, heartwarming, and I think that might have been why we got so excited collectively about it, was because he didn't really get a proper goodbye from the UFC, right? Like, I feel like for Anderson Silva to say goodbye to the Octagon, we would need to have a big event, preferably in Brazil, to have, you know, the Ain't No Sunshine remix, and he didn't get that. He got like a kind of anticlimactic goodbye. There wasn't much of a buildup. It was against Uriah Hall, which was a fine fight, stylistically interesting and everything else, but it wasn't the right fight for him at the moment. And then after it was done, he didn't really even embarrass himself, but the way, you know, Dana White went on to talk about him and the whole conversation and kind of like a lot of promotion saying they weren't gonna try to pursue him. The whole way that ended left a very sour taste in my mouth. So to watch that, you know, to watch Anderson go out and do that, and you can add all the asterisks to Cesar Chavez Jr. And there are several. He's known for not being necessarily the most disciplined guy. He came in extremely overweight. I, again, don't know that much about boxing, but I know that a lot of people put asterisks in his career, even though he was a legit boxer who fought legit names and was an actual champion. Like, all of that aside, I still feel like he did something that was really cool. He looked really happy doing it. And it was unexpected, because with all that aside, I think a lot of people really didn't think that ultimately he would have what it took to beat a boxing champion. And he did. So I don't know. That's kind of how I felt about it. I was like weirdly happy by the end of it. Not because of MMA, not because I don't add those stakes to those fights. I don't really think it's like a sport versus sport thing, because there are always so many variables and we're never putting the best against the best. And they're never fighting in the same division. It's always a heavier person anyway. But it just made me happy to see Anderson Silva, that guy who gave us so much joy in MMA, kind of get, I won't even call it closure, because I think he's probably going to do, I don't know about MMA, but at least a few more boxing fights. But it was really cool to see him have sort of that really nice moment.
Sean, I know we kind of had this conversation on What the Heck, but not everybody, you know, may have seen that conversation or listened to it on the podcast network. So give us your thoughts on what Anderson Silva did on Saturday night.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Fernanda really hit on it. The main thing for me, and I think the main thing for a lot of people in the MMA community just in general, was the joy of it, right? Just to see Anderson out there once again, joyful, exuberant, enjoying himself and really in his element in a way that we haven't seen in such a long time. And we talk about legends of the game all the time, and I think sometimes we use that word maybe too loosely, and we attribute that to people who maybe don't deserve it. But Anderson's a legend, and he's beyond a legend, really. Like, when I was, Mike, we talked about this earlier this week, but when I was a fan of the sport growing up, Anderson was one of my first favorite fighters. He was the guy who was the wizard, who was out here doing things that nobody thought possible. He was out here just really breaking every sort of mold and becoming this singular, unique figure in the fight game, and somebody who felt untouchable in a way that was almost supernatural. And the joy he exuded throughout those fights, and how much he clearly just reveled in being that guy. It has been so unfortunate the last half decade, really longer than that, right? It's been almost 8 years now of his very sudden, very sharp decline, and how sad that has really gotten. I mean, you look at his last 9 UFC fights, he won one fight. And it was a fight he probably shouldn't have won against Derek Brunson. And so it's just, he never really had that moment where we could all celebrate him and just have that throwback opponent. He never got, you know, an easy mark on a way out. He was always getting stuck fighting the Jared Cannoneers and the Uriah Halls and all of this of the world, where it's just like, why are we doing this? Like, who is this for? No one is, I'm sure Jared Cannonier is really happy to have a win over Anderson Silva on his record, and same with Uriah Hall, but nobody actually benefited from that, really. It's not like the UFC had some huge Jared Cannonier rise in stock from that. Like, that was just spinning our wheels in a way that felt sad, and it didn't feel right. It didn't feel right for a person of Anderson's stature. So to see him back out there, last weekend and just enjoying himself and being Anderson Silva, where again, he's doing the Stephen Bonner thing midway through the fight where he's in the corner and he's telling him throw down and like, this is, come on, come on. And to see his confidence rise throughout the fight and really crest halfway through where he just knew, this is me. I am back. I'm in my element. I am that guy once again, even at age 46, the joy that he was exuding. And I think the joy that just you could feel from the MMA community was so cool to experience. It is so rare that we get these opportunities just as a community as a whole to really seem to revel and enjoy something simultaneously on this sort of level. But this really did feel like a celebration in a way, right? Because we've been taking a lot of losses. Like, let's be honest. We've been taking a lot of losses in this whole MMA versus boxing thing. It's seemingly every month we're getting out here getting embarrassed in front of the world. And this wasn't that. This was the opposite of that. And for it to be a 46-year-old Anderson Silva doing it against I know Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. isn't, you know, the guy that boxing would send to represent him. but to see him doing it at age 46 against a 35-year-old former champion who has 60 bouts of experience in that guy's home on a show that is basically built and dedicated around that guy's father and honoring his father, like to do it in those circumstances is so unlikely. 5-1 underdog. And it was just, it's so cool. It was so cool to see that for Anderson because he never got that storybook ending. He never got that closure, like Fernandez said, that happy ending. And I don't know, I mean, this isn't going to be his last fight, right? Because now doors are open and he's probably going to have lots of options in front of him in terms of boxing. But to see Anderson be able to have this moment, a moment he's wanted since the first day he beat the crap out of Rich Franklin and has been calling for a chance to fight in boxing. To see this was just so overwhelmingly cool for me, and I think for a lot of people in the community and for Anderson as well.
All right. So going back to you, Sean, because I mean, you mentioned we've seen these MMA crossover fights to boxing for a little while now. It has become all the rage. This one was, I guess, a little less freak show-ish because it was an MMA fighter taking on a legit pro boxer. It kind of flew under the radar. It was a pro fight. It wasn't against a YouTuber or anything like that. And I'm not knocking the paws because make that money, son. But after seeing, you know, Conor lose to Floyd and Ben Askren getting lamped, as Jed Meshew says, by Jake Paul, was Anderson's performance, like, it was a great moment for us all to like kind of celebrate him. It was a great moment for him, but was that, in your eyes, righting the wrong for MMA, or do we still have to wait and see what happens on August 28th with Tyron Woodley fighting Jake Paul?
I mean, what does that mean, really, though, right? Righting the wrong, like, this isn't going to stop. This isn't, there's no end in sight of whatever this insane trend and fad of all of these circus fights is. Like, this is only going to mean, this is only going to lead to more of them because now there's more people looking at this of like, hey, like, that's an opportunity for me to go make a lot of money. If Tyron Woodley loses against Jake Paul, like, I don't know that this changed that outcome and how we would feel after that, right? I think we're just going to have to be prepared for MMA to take a lot of L's. In this sort of weird saga that this is going to be for however long it lasts. But it was, again, nice to just have one night where we could not take that L, take a very surprising W at that, and again, just celebrate Anderson, remember who Anderson is, because I think there's a lot of people in the MMA space who were not around in 2011 and 2012 when he was in this huge series with Chael Sonnen, when he was doing just absurd things to Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin. There are a lot of MMA fans right now watching this or just consuming content, probably a majority of them, who have no real actual concept and understanding of who Anderson Silva is other than people like us just talking about like how you should have been there. And so for him to just have this one moment where he can kind of be celebrated in that way that he never really was in the UFC on the way out, I just think it was cool. I don't know that it's going to lead towards any lasting impact, but it was cool nonetheless.
What say you, Fernanda? Like, I know you didn't really necessarily look at this fight through the MMA fan lens. This is like, you know, this is the Anderson show. You wanted to see him have his moment, and he did. But in the MMA community, is all right in the world because of what happened on Saturday, or does the onus still sort of lie on Tyron Woodley to knock out Jake Paul and, you know, stop him from running his mouth?
I have a really tough time with, like, because again, like I said, I don't really ever see it as like MMA versus boxing. I think we have a human tendency to try to add bigger stakes to the situations to get ourselves more emotionally involved. And we do that a lot with this. And it's kind of like, is it MMA versus boxing? Like in this case, more so because you have an actual person who had boxed for so many years and you had an actual MMA fighter who was at the top of his game and who was a striker. So, you know, you had more of a parity where you could sort of compare. It doesn't look as oranges and apples, but then you get a fight like Tyron Woodley and you're talking about this guy who isn't a proficient, he obviously is a proficient striker to the level that you can be in MMA, but like it wasn't his thing. Like he wasn't as much of a technical, spectacular striker as Anderson against a guy who I am tired of like knocking on the pulse at this point in my life. Cause it's kind of like when, remember, everybody's just piling on Justin Bieber. Like it just feels so low hanging fruit. Like I'm over it. But these are people who are having professional boxing fights and are training in boxers. So I'm not just their boxers in my head, I guess. Sorry, boxing people, if I'm offending everyone, but like, so you're having this kind of fight where an MMA fighter who had been declining in his MMA career, who isn't known for being the best boxer, who wasn't known for being the best boxer. And Tyron, even you have that a lot better than with Ben Askren, right? Because that was the most ridiculous example against a person who is still coming in to the world of boxing. Usually you have these huge freaking size disparities in these fights. The Logans are always the Logan is one of the Pulse. I feel like an old lady again. What are TikToks? But you have these guys who are much bigger, fighting much older competitors who are coming. So what is this? Like, I don't understand this. What is being proven about MMA and what is being proven about boxing? To me, there's really no such thing. To me, the stakes really are as low as two people and the people around them making money. And I'm fine with that. That's absolutely fine. As long as you're an adult and you're consenting and you're, you know, in physical conditions, because obviously it's a contact sport. You don't want to just, you know, have extremely menacing situations happening. But, you know, these are consenting adults who are medically clear to participate in the situation and make money. Good on them. But to me, this is not a MMA boxing honor type of thing. Might be an unpopular opinion, but that's just really not the lens through which I watch these things.
Yeah, I think the important lesson to learn here is that whether Tyron Woodley beats Jake Paul or loses to Jake Paul, we remember what happened this past Saturday with Anderson Silva and the smile on his face and that moment he had with Canelo Alvarez after the fight. Like, that was just so cool. And hopefully that can stick in our memories for a little while these, as Sean said, these crazy fights continue to happen. So we're going to move ahead to the other piece of business that went down this past Saturday night. But the point for round one goes to... Now, truth be told, I can't hear any of the sound effects, so I'm taking a guess that we got it right. But it goes to the red corner. Fernanda gets her team on the board. Really good round. Super close.
That's why you're my teammate. Let's go.
It's all good.
Go red corner. Sorry, Shaheen. Right. Still love you. All love.
We're just getting rolling here. It was like 10 to 9 and 3 quarters, if we're being honest. Like Star Search scores.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
But now we're going to tag in Jed Meshew and Jose Youngs and move to round two and discuss the Korean Zombie getting back on track. Great performance against Dan Ige, unanimous decision win, used some very effective wrestling, just had an answer seemingly for everything Dan Ige had in that fight. Plus, we found out that he had a shoulder injury during the fight, which made it even more impressive. So, Jose, we'll begin with you. What did you think of the Korean Zombie's performance and what it does for him in the landscape of this featherweight division?
Well, I'm going to preface this with what I said in the preview show is everyone take what I say with a grain of salt when I'm talking about the Korean Zombie, because I am probably the biggest Korean Zombie mark in the MMA landscape. And everything I say is going to be completely biased, and I have nothing against Dan Ige. He just happened to fight the Korean Zombie. So I'm going to watch the Korean Zombie do anything, and I'm going to be excited. I could watch him make a bowl of pudding from scratch, and I'm going to be enamored. So, of course, I love everything. Metaphor?
Use that for Anderson like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, because pudding's great. I also said
a lot of people make pudding on YouTube.
Here's what: if you want to run through the lexicon of Jose, it's make pudding, fight a door, Jed Meshew likes Rolos, compare someone to TJ Detweiler, or say someone's late because they're auditioning for the Dancing Raisins. That's the entire lexicon of Jose Young's thing.
Detweiler's a good one.
Yeah, that's whatever his name is, Niall McGrath. Anywho. So, Korean Zombie, awesome fight, awesome performance, awesome everything around. Real bizarre he didn't get a performance bonus, not in the sense that he deserved one, because there were a lot of great performances that deserved it over a five-round decision win over Dan Ige. But this is the first time he's won and not got a post-fight bonus in the UFC. He even dates back to the knockout of the night, submission of the night era before it became the performance bonuses. He was winning everything left and right, even like at any time he won. So the fact that he won, his shoulder was trying to run away from his body, and he kept on fighting, and he got back into the win column after what he said was a knockout loss to Brian Ortega. I know it was a decision loss, but the Korean Zombie says it was a knockout loss. He doesn't remember anything past the second round. So 10 out of 10 across the board for my main man, the Korean Zombie, the only MMA shirt that I still own. But again, take what I say with a grain of salt, because anything the Korean Zombie does is 10 out of 10 across the board.
All right, Jed Meshew, how are you grading his performance? Are you giving it a 10 out of 10? Do you look at it differently? Would you watch the Korean Zombie make pudding or pour a bowl of cereal or anything of the sort?
I mean, it was a 10 out of 10. I'm not going to watch the man make pudding. Like, I'm not going to watch anybody make pudding.
That's your loss, bro.
No, I'm good. There are a lot broader culinary topics that I could watch. I'd watch him make sushi, watch him do anything. Also, let's put Davidson Figueiredo making sushi somewhere. That is a thing that I'd watch the hell out of. But I digress. It was obviously a phenomenal performance. I mean, I'm not going to argue that Jose is a bigger TKZ fan. Like, that's fine. He can have that one. But everybody is a Korean Zombie fan. Like, he is the original action fighter. He's that dude. And I mean, like Jose said, I hate to give him credit, but like, this man is a performance bonus machine. And honestly, one of the great tragedies of MMA is we lost a good portion of his prime years, quote unquote, to his military service. Cause this dude, we've been throwing up, you know, fight of the year candidates forever, and we just missed out like 2 years of that. But he came back, and he's still got that thing on him, man. Like, Dan Ige can fight his ass off, and Chan Sung Jung beat his ass. Like, that was a consummate performance over a very tough guy. I don't know what it does for him. Obviously, a win is great, and I will watch him anytime he competes against anybody. I know he was making some call outs after the fight. I don't know where that gets him, you know, moving towards a title shot. But I mean, it's just friggin' dope that dude is still here. Cause I remember him fighting Jose Aldo what feels like 20 years ago. And Jose Aldo is still technically a top competitor, weight class below, but like, Korean Zombie's just, dude, it's awesome. It's awesome to see a guy at that weight class have that kind of longevity and still be every bit as exciting and fun and interesting as he was when he was on the come up. So hell yeah, Korean Zombie. That was dope.
So we're not sure where this takes him, but we're going to dive into that a little bit right now, because with the craziness at 145 pounds, you get the title fight coming up between Volkanovski and Ortega. It looks as if the plan is to try and rebook the Holloway-Rodriguez fight after Holloway's injury. There's a lot of fun options out there for the Korean Zombie, Jed, but not a ton that make a lot of sense for what Zombie is probably looking for. So if you got a phone call right now that you are the UFC matchmaker just for the Korean Zombie in his next fight, what are you doing with them?
I mean, it's just tough because, like, I just want to give him a title shot. I don't care that it's kind of weird to do it because he lost, like, just a minute ago to the guy who's about to get his ass beat by Alexander Volkanovski, I think, in September. But, like, that's what I want to do. I think the actual answer is you put together the future fight of the year with Calvin Kattar, because that would just be absolute bananagrams. And I'll watch the hell out of it. The only part of me that is sad about it is that might end up giving Korean Zombie a loss and then he doesn't get to fight for a belt. But if you really got the cojones, just throw him into a title shot. He gets the winner. Max Holloway can go back and fight Yair Rodriguez, because nobody wants Max to fight for the title again because he's already lost to Volko twice. Like, I know that he 100% deserves it. I'm not saying that. But, like, Max needs to move up to 155 anyway, make some hay up there. Let's throw TKZ in for a belt, but no one's going to do it. So, Calvin Kattar, fight of the year. Who says no?
Are you saying no to that, Jose?
I'm not going to say no to watching the Korean Zombie fight anyone. I mean, Calvin Kattar would make the most sense logically in terms of the ranking, but I don't know physically where Calvin Kattar is, because he was basically a walking corpse against Max Holloway. I mean, there's a reason that Dana White, like, we came out with the Spencer Fisher story, and then all of a sudden Dana White is freaking out about Calvin Kattar on like national television on ABC, because he's like, get this guy to the hospital right away. I don't want him talking to anyone. So the last image we have of Calvin Kattar, well, besides, of course, your phenomenal interview on MMAfighting.com's YouTube page, was him getting the soul beaten out of him by Max Holloway. So I know Josh Emmett is still on the mend from his knee injury. Arnold Allen is there. I'm not going to say no to watching Arnold Allen fight anyone, but it's probably not the most exciting stylistic matchup. God,
I'll say no to that.
Please, yeah, I was about to say, that's Arnold, not the fight Allen. I want.
Give that's me the walking the- corpse versus the Korean Zombie. That's a match. That's perfect. The storylines are perfect.
That's fine right there. But, like, would you say no to the Korean Zombie fighting, like, Edson Barboza, who just turned Shane Burgos into another, like, walking dead person? Like, he literally turned the man's brain off with his fist. Or Giga Chikadze, who's stealing people's livers with his foot. Like, I would much rather watch those two fights, because that's a fight of the year, performance of the year. Stick it on ABC, stick it on ESPN. I just want that on national television. I don't want it buried on a prelim of a pay-per-view. I want violence personified for five rounds on a nationally syndicated network. That's what I want. So the Korean Zombie versus anyone except Arnold Allen, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it, but just doesn't satiate my bloodlust in the MMA landscape.
So when I spoke to Zombie prior to the fight, he, along with his coach Eddie Cha, said that he briefly pondered retirement after the loss to Brian Ortega Jose, but then said, you know what? Took a look in the mirror. I could still get back to title contention. So give me a fight. Danny Gay was the only guy available. I want to get back to the belt. So it got me thinking, Jose, if you had to guess, like, I know if it was up to you, Zombie's fighting for titles every time he fights, but do you predict realistically that the Korean Zombie will fight for a UFC title before he ultimately calls it a career?
I would say it would be closer to yes, especially given how the featherweight division runs. You get everyone in the top five at one point is either hurt or on a long layoff, or change in weight classes or whatever. Like, Max Holloway's been on long layoffs. Ortega's been on long layoffs. Yair hasn't fought in, what, 2-3 years? Who knows when Calvin Kattar comes back? Korean Zombie himself lost like 2 or 3 years of his career. So by default, he might just get a title shot, considering he would be a fresh matchup. And Dana White has always loved the Korean Zombie. So yeah, I would say the answer is probably yes, but it's not going to be in 2021 or 2022.
Jed? What do you think? Will we see Korean Zombie realistically fight for a world title once again?
Yeah, I think so, but I don't think he gets it straight up. I mean, that's the thing about Zombie, right? Like, he's so beloved by hardcores that even, like, regular people kind of know who he is at this point. and you can just throw him in there as a short notice replacement. I don't think he puts together two more wins off the back of this over like top five competitors to be like, got to give him the shot. I think they should have given him the shot and not done the Ortega fight. Frankly, I think that to me made a lot of sense, and they should have just done that. And when they moved on from that, I think he's going to Bisping his way into a title shot. Like Jose's right. You know, guys fall out, guys get injured, guys take some time off in this weight class. I think that is very much in play for him, because he's going to win two, lose one for however long he continues doing it. And he just needs a little bit of timing. Somebody gets hurt, pulls out. Like right now, if something happens to Ortega in the next couple of months, like KZ's in there, right? Like I think that's just pretty logical. Like, I mean, I guess you could put Yair, but really you're going to put TKZ in for September if something happens to Ortega. So, and the way Jose is talking, maybe he'll just go kneecap Ortega and make it happen for Korean Zombie. And then we got it. Then he's right for the first time that he's ever been right on this program. And we get Korean Zombie in a title fight.
There you go. We're away. Apparently he's awaiting the results of an MRI for the shoulder, but yeah, if he's good to go, get back to the States, get back to fight ready and get ready for September. Cause
come on, you know, that man would fight for a title. If he was offered a title shot in September, even if they told him his shoulder was going to fall off, he'd be like, all right, let's go. I'm in. I'll hit him with my other shoulder.
Be that as it may, good win for Zombie. Pretty good spot right now.
Better win for Jose.
Yes, we'll see where he goes from here. As this tag team matchup moves ahead, I have a feeling we're about to explode into pure chaos. So far, it's been pretty calm here. But the point for round two of this tag team bout goes to the squad of... the Arizona Natives, Jose and Sean. They are on the board. It is 1-1. I'm liking where this is going. I have a feeling things are about to brew over. Remember, both teams still have a rebuttal should you choose to use it. So tags are made. Back to Fernanda. Back to Sean. Let us discuss the welterweight title picture in the UFC, which appears to be quite clear. But Nate Diaz decided to play his game and insert himself into the conversation this week. He decided to play the game with the champion, Kamaru Usman. Usman took the bait. He told Diaz to call Hunter Campbell. Nate gave some props to Usman in the end, but Nate likes to plant those seeds, and more often than not, the people react and he can find his way into these big opportunities. So, Sean, we're going to start with you. Let's kind of switch things up this time around. In today's UFC, is there any chance Nate Diaz jumps the queue and gets this fight despite losing to Leon a couple of weeks ago?
First of all, I love the way you phrased that, as if Nate Diaz decided to enter into the title picture. Like Nate Diaz is out here being like, yeah, you know what? I do want to fight for a welterweight title. Let's go ahead and do that. Also, really quickly, unrelated, but I have to rewind like 15 minutes ago. At some point in that inane gibberish Jed was saying, he said that no one wanted to see Max Holloway fight for a UFC title again against Volkanovski, and that's just blatantly false. I think most people would actually really like to see that trilogy fight. I think most people felt like Max is sort of the uncrowned champion right now, and that's probably the most popular fight you could put together in that division in terms of a title fight. So once again, Jed is wrong and has no actual pulse of the people. It's not your turn to talk, Jed. It's my turn. Anyway, back to
you're on my time now. I'm Brian Ortega.
Nate Diaz is not going to fight for Kamaru Usman for a UFC title. That it's frankly amazing that we're even having a segment about it. I think that speaks to the power of Nate Diaz and how just the rules don't apply to him at all. He plays by a completely different set of rules and rankings than seemingly the rest of the population when it comes to the UFC. The welterweight division right now is still such a mess. Like if you look at it, there are two people and conceivably three soon enough who could say that they have a claim to fight for that title. It is so backed up. Colby Covington probably doesn't deserve that fight right now. He's only fought once since he lost, but he seems like he's going to get it. It'll probably be the biggest fight they can make in terms of the actual people who deserve it. Leon Edwards should be fighting for that title, but he's probably like 8 wins away from it at this point. Like he's just never going to get that opportunity. And then if Wonderboy beats Gilbert Burns at UFC 264, like he could be that guy who just jumps in front of Leon at that point. So there's no reason Nate should be in this conversation. And again, it speaks to the power of Nate Diaz and how unique of a figure he is within MMA that we're even having this conversation. But no, absolutely not. Nate Diaz should not be fighting for the welterweight title.
Fernando, on paper, this seems, like Sean said, like an absolutely outrageous conversation to have. But we have seen crazy things happen before in our sport. We've seen guys coming off of losses get title shots. We've seen guys off consecutive losses get title shots. Is this something that could actually happen because of who Nate Diaz is? Could he talk his way into this next title shot? Is that even possible here?
That is such, the way you phrased it was so sneaky, because the question wasn't, should he fight for a title? Because that obviously is no. How should he, like, in the logical world, bypass the guy who just beat him and who was on this insane streak? That is absolutely insane. So if the question is should, yeah, it's a definite no. But your question was, is there a chance? And I struggled with this. I still am struggling with this, because I want to say logically, as a rational person, no, of course not. But
kill the rationality.
A chance. Thank you, Jed. He's like the devil in my shoulder, on my shoulder. But if there's a chance, let's entertain this. Usman, obviously, probably would be interested. For him, that's a more interesting fight for several reasons than Leon Edwards in terms of money and the chances of him winning it. Not that, you know, I don't think he's too concerned with that at the time. He's obviously proven he's an amazing fighter who can beat pretty much everyone in the division, including Leon Edwards. But you have that factor of maybe this appeals to Usman. As things are right now, I don't think the UFC could possibly justify it, just doing that now. Like, yeah, you literally just lost to Leon Edwards, even though if you ask an EDS fan, they'll probably tell you another five rounds and he would have won it. You can't justify that now, but you can justify it in a very weird universe in which, I don't know, they want to schedule a fight for 2 months from now and Leon can't make that deadline for whatever reason. And then they're like, let's just do Nate Diaz. I think it's highly unlikely. And I am with Shaheen in that I think it's crazy that we're even having this conversation. It really just speaks to the mystique of one Nathan Diaz, that we're just willing to put him in any title conversation for any title, for any division, really, at any time. But as painful as it is for you to say this, if the question is there a chance, so you're telling me there's a chance, I am not willing to say that there isn't a chance. So yes, I guess there is a chance. I can't believe I'm gonna say this. I've been influenced by Jed, but okay.
Wait, can I rebuttal my own teammate? Is that like an option?
Hey, you can use your rebuttal however you want. Go ahead.
This should absolutely happen. Why do you all hate fun? Like, one, it should happen because Kamaru Usman is the man, and he wants it to happen, and he should get to say, I choose you,
what's
Nate.
What's going on right now?
Nobody, Sean, nobody Sean, cares about Leon Edwards. Colby Covington sucks. Right. If Wonder Boy wins, yes, he deserves a title fight. But if he loses, you don't need to run Gilbert Burns right back. And are you really going to put the winner of Luque versus Chiesa in a title fight? I mean, maybe if this were a sport, maybe they would deserve it. But like, screw it, man. Nate almost beat him. Let's go.
Jose, would you like to say something to Jed before we turn it over to back
Jed's
over to Sean?
Just out here with his own teammate. What's going on?
Talking to Jed is like trying to have
an energy, though. I feel like I'm a very like cautious person, and I feel like Jed's just reckless energy. Like, we really complement each other well as teammates.
I learned when I first met Jed about 3 weeks ago, I learned that you can't really interact with him like a rational human being. So it's like trying to talk to a duck. So no, I don't want to interact with Jed again.
Okay. Well, anyways, so going back to Fernando and Sean, Fernando, we'll go back to you. And Dana White has been saying it for a while now, but we all know that Dana White likes to say things. It appears that Colby Covington will be next for Usman, that rematch from their incredible fight in December of 2019. Usman's manager, Ali Abdulaziz, said that there's some good news for Usman. Don't know if it's related or not. And then he tweeted out earlier today that Nate Diaz over Colby all day or something to that effect. But listen, whether it's Nate or if Wonderboy beats Burns or even Leon Edwards gets in there, maybe it's not Nate, but is there any way the UFC changes gears and we don't see Usman Covington 2 next?
See, the way you phrase these questions, Mike, is there any way? Is there, it's the UFC. There's always a way and there's always a chance. So that's, I struggle with these questions. But I do think logically, right? The Covington fight, it's pretty much what I think is happening. And it's unfortunate because obviously they had such an amazing first fight because obviously everybody just wants to see Colby Covington get injured and Usman is the person who has the best like chances of making that happen in terms of schadenfreude to the world. But I think it's unfortunate for Leon Edwards. Like, and I think that, you know, we paint him as this very tragic character. And I don't know if like he actually likes it that the entire MMA world is always talking about him like this poor puppy that, you know, poor him, like helpless little thing. He's not a helpless little thing. He's a grown man who has built an amazing streak and who has made some decisions. Like, for instance, if I'm Leon Edwards right now, right? And you have the whole beef with Masvidal going on. Why is he not interested in making that happen? That's a winnable fight for him. That is a fight that could be in any pay-per-view because at this point you're going to, even though Masvidal is on that kind of like little slope, you want to associate yourself with him at this point. So like, why not like create that? And then maybe, you know, accept that you're not getting a title shot at this point. I don't know, but I think a lot of it, as it always happens in the UFC, has a lot to do with timing and, you know, people get injured and they want to do things at a certain date. And if people aren't ready and there's somebody else who is, they come in. I think right now it's pretty unavoidable that it is going to be Usman and Covington again. And I have no complaints about that. Like the way that the first fight went on, like, I think there's really no, I take no issue with that at all. I do feel for Leon Edwards because it's very rare for you to build the streak like he did and put himself in a position like he did and still, like, even though he's coming off that win, a lot of people are still talking a lot more about the guy that he beat than they are talking about him. And just the whole thing really is a little bit sad, but yeah, I'm just thinking that there is just Usman and Covington next.
See, I asked the questions that way because we get that very intelligent answer from you. If I just said, will the UFC go another direction, you could just say no.
Intelligent.
Yeah, you could just say no. And that's it. Next question, please. But to you, Mr. Alshadi, let's just say Wonderboy goes out there and starches Gilbert Burns. Let's say he just stops him like mid-second round. It's like a flawless performance. And that is a big if. This is very hypothetical here. Is there any chance that the UFC just says, you know what? Let's give Wonderboy his opportunity. Let's give him that crack at the belt. Colby can wait.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a huge chance. If the question in general is there any chance that Colby isn't the next guy fighting for the belt? I think there's probably a 50% chance. And there's a couple of reasons, right? One is Colby historically is not the easiest guy to deal with if you're the UFC. Like there's a huge chance that Colby's either going to price himself out of it or he's just going to be such a nuisance to them that they're just going to move on and be like, all right, guy, like we'll just go to the next person like we've done 80,000 times in the past. And then the scenario you just laid out where if Wonderboy goes out there on this big Conor pay-per-view and does something just extraordinary, we've seen the UFC want to try to push Wonderboy into these type of situations. I mean, if Colby's even giving them the slightest bit of guff, they will just go right to Wonderboy in that spot. And that wouldn't be unprecedented. So just in general, absolutely, there's a huge, huge chance still that we don't end up getting Covington versus Usman 2 next. I think that's probably ultimately where it ends up, because Colby would be insane to try to talk himself out of this opportunity. But I mean, Colby does what Colby does, and we've seen it in the past. So I think 50-50 shot, but it probably will end up being that.
Yeah, Colby seems ready. I spoke with him a couple of weeks ago. He said he's ready to fight tomorrow. He said the right things about the UFC. Shout out to Dana and Hunter and the whole team. So he's on their good side, at least when he does interviews. So we'll see what happens with this title picture. I think it's crazy that we're talking about Nate, but that is today's UFC. We get ready rebuttal, for the final. Mike. You already used your rebuttal.
Can I give him my rebuttal? I feel like he's a more rebuttally person.
He took your team's rebuttal, right?
Dana
there
said that he was getting the next title fight. The rules, it's like a 90% he doesn't.
You got to uphold the rules.
Listen,
there are no rules here. This is chaos.
We appreciate you, Jed, and we're going to hear more from you in a minute. But the last 30 seconds of your vocals don't count. They're just there forever, but they have nothing to do with this game. So the final tags are about to be made.
Jed's words are equivalent to UFC title shots. It just doesn't matter.
This could get ugly in round four, but the point for round three, cue the drums, goes to Sean and Jose. It is 2-1. What a battle, ladies and gentlemen.
Whew.
This is crazy. Good job, Sean. I'm feeling the volcano is about to erupt.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom. Mom, I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Because there is a lot of action going on in the world of MMA this weekend. It is Jose versus Jed Meshew in this final round of regulation. We have the UFC back on Saturday. The event headlined by Ciryl Gane and Alexander Volkov. Bellator is back tomorrow with Bellator 261. Interim heavyweight title on the line between Timothy Johnson and Valentin Madolsky. The PFL is also back tomorrow. We got Kayla Harrison and Cindy Dandua on that card. Anthony Pettis will look to get his first PFL win and try to earn a playoff spot. So, Jed, we're going to kick things off with you in terms of intrigue, storyline, overall interest in the aftermath of these events in your eyes. Which promotion is putting its best foot forward, so to speak, this weekend?
Look, you should know where I'm going, Mike. It's Bellator because, I mean, they have a heavyweight main event as well, but theirs is way more fun. I'm not here to tell you that Ciryl Gane versus Alexander Volkov isn't the better fight of the heavyweight main events this weekend. It 100% is, but that fight might be boring, or it doesn't get us anywhere super interesting. Like, the winner of that's still not getting a title fight because heavyweight is logjammed in the UFC right now. So it's just a little bit of spinning our wheels, even if it's technically better MMA. Whereas in Bellator, we have a title fight, man. It is an interim title. I know, like, Bader is still nominally the heavyweight champion, despite the fact that he lost his light heavyweight belt, which has always seemed a little dumb to me how that would work. But anyway, he's still the heavyweight champion, but he, like, doesn't fight at heavyweight ever anymore because he also doesn't fight at light heavyweight. Spent a lot of time doing Grand Prix and stuff. And we get Tim Johnson, man. I am here for the career, late career renaissance of Tim Johnson. Every year I do a weight division, essentially, awards of the year. And Tim Johnson was my heavyweight of the year last year. Three fights, three victories, upset win over Tyrell Fortune, upset win over Matt Mitrione. Split decision over Chuck Congo, because that's just what Chuck Congo does. He wins or loses split decisions. Like, you can't beat him or lose to him super definitively, at least not this stage. That's three wins for a dude who nobody believes it. I don't believe in Tim Johnson still, and I'm a Tim Johnson fan. Like, Tim Johnson's family doesn't believe in him, but he put together three wins, and he is the number one or two ranked heavyweight in Bellator's admittedly awful rankings. He is going to fight like a legitimately good heavyweight prospect in Valentin Moldavsky. Like, I'm just here. I'm here for the two big old walruses just smacking each other around for however long it is. And nobody's talking about it. It's so rare that you get a title fight, be it interim or otherwise, that nobody gives two shits about. But somehow we've managed that with Bellator this week. But I care, Bellator, and I see you, and I'm going to be tuning in.
I'm guessing there's air horns coming from Casey. I don't know. I don't really know. But Jose, your thoughts? PFL, Bellator, UFC, in terms of storylines and intrigue and interest and things we can discuss after the fact, what has like the most potential to be the best card of the three?
Well, Jed's answer was obvious the second they announced the Timothy Johnson fight. Anytime there's a tall, goofy white heavyweight, Jed Meshew makes that appointment television. Now, if you're talking about an actual like athletic sporting event, obviously Ciryl Gane, Alex Volkov is the way to go. The Kayla Harrison fight, I'm always interested in watching Kayla Harrison fight, and obviously what she says after. Let's see if Anthony Pettis can back out into the win column, but unfortunately, that's not my answer. It is the UFC, and I'm going to talk about more than the main event, because I like mixed martial arts, and I'm going to watch the entire card. Anytime you want to throw an Andre Fili on the card, Tim Means, Renato Moicano is opening the main card against Jay Herbert, Hani Barcelos, Daniel Pineda. Like, these are names that, like, we just talked about fighters like the Korean Zombie. I just talked about glowingly about how I just love violent, chaotic fighters who are just high-level martial artists. Everyone I just named is that, and they're all on the main card. Worley Alves is fighting. Of course, I assume he's going to probably call out the marijuana guy, Nate Diaz. Not going to happen. Sorry. Charles Rosa has never won or lost two fights in a row in his entire UFC career. So who knows if that trend will continue. I mean, he's fighting Justin James. Justin James probably, if he loses, that's a wrap for his UFC career. Julia Vila, at one point, everyone was very high on her. I know she stumbled in recent, but at least people will tune into her fight. So, I am very excited for the UFC on ESPN or whatever it was. Ike Villanueva, I think, is on this card. I chatted with him a lot on Fight Island. I might be an Ike Villanueva fan just from having conversations with him. And I didn't understand a word he was saying. I think he was speaking English. But if anyone has watched King of the Hill, it's basically like talking to Boomhauer. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I know I'm understanding like the last word of every sentence, but I'm not quite sure what you're saying, but I'm here for it. So I'm all about it. I know Kenny Njikuwu is fighting on that card, just knocked out Israel Adesanya's opponent. So top to bottom, to answer the question in terms of storylines and where we go after this fight, the answer is the UFC. I know Jed Meshew is a proponent of quote-unquote bad heavyweight MMA. He's also not a Stipe Miocic fan for whatever reason. I guess he just doesn't like good heavyweight MMA. So the answer is the UFC.
That's not my fault. Hey. Look at all that knowledge. Shut it down. That was it. That's the point. We didn't even go to a final round.
Well,
I will just use my rebuttal quickly. Okay. I will not deny that there's a lot of names, because if not, it's just going to go to waste. So might as well. I will not deny that there are a lot of like good names for us hardcores in the UFC card. And I had no idea none of them were fighting until I looked at the card today, because there are just no super compelling fights. And, in the sense of popularity, in the sense of just like looking at it on paper, yes, Renato Moicano and Raoni Barcelos, who I will forever defend and name drop and everything, because everybody should love Raoni Barcelos. He's amazing. But then you look at the strength of the card and you look at the co-main event and you defend that co-main event between Tanner fucking Bowser and Ovince St. Preux to me.
You know who's going to do a better job at defending the co-main event? your teammate Jed Meshew, because that fight is right up his alley. overweight light heavyweight fighting a tiny heavyweight, that's a Jed Meshew fight. Across the board. Even Mike knows it. Even Mike knows it.
That fight's hot garbage. You didn't even mention the best fight on the UFC card, Jose. Sean's trying to big up you with, oh, look at all this knowledge. Where's the shout out for Shahat Rakhmonov versus Michelle Pazayas? That fight's going to be bananas. That's the best fight on the whole freaking card. And you're just
Jed,
like,
I can worry about that one. Jed, I can Google fight cards too. It's off the top of my dome. Can you name anyone else on the Bellator card besides the main event? Probably not. Next question.
Why would I? I'm not here for 13 fights. That's nonsense.
hang on. We heard from Fernanda. Now we got to hear from Sean.
Jed literally just said that was the best. The Michelle Pereira fight was one of the best fights of the weekend, if not the best fight of the weekend. That alone makes us win because we picked the UFC card. So yeah. He just
storyline, Jonathan. It's about storyline.
It's about storyline. Then that's where I will.
Johnson's resurgence as a viable heavyweight in the year of the Lord.
They're great names, but we're talking storylines and excitement.
Jed, if you could only watch one fight out of those two, you know you're going to watch the Michelle Pereira fight. I'm just telling you.
That is absolutely not true.
That is absolutely false. I know you way too well.
Wait, isn't it Prazeris?
Not on this card, by the way.
No, it's Prazeris. It's Michelle Prazeris. Pereira is fighting Nicole Price.
Yeah. Oh, if it was Michelle Pereira, 100% I'm in on that.
Never mind. My rebuttal is null and void then. Yeah.
Your rebuttal had a wrong name. You had a Brazilian to check it, Shaheen. That was your downfall. I have to use my Brazilianness.
It happens. Well, we heard Jed knew where the next question was going, and he answered it. The most underrated, under the radar fight of the weekend. Jose, what is yours? Fighter storyline that isn't getting enough love. What is yours?
The Shahrat Rakhmonov fight absolutely rules because that's one of the few fighters on the card without a Wikipedia page. I spoke with Shahrat on UFC Fight Island. Dude was wearing a hat made of a legitimate wolf, like not fake. Like the fur was made of a living creature, like a wolf. And he beat up a human being on national television and then put on a hat made of a wolf. So yeah, Shahrat Rakhmonov is about that life. Also, I'm obviously a big Andre Feely fan. He flies the comic book fan banner like no one else does in the UFC. If anyone's seen his bookshelf, it might rival mine in terms of graphic novels. And I will firmly admit he reads a lot of stuff I haven't read and vice versa. So yeah, the Andre Feely fight's always interesting. Daniel Pineda, talk about resurgence. I know he just lost his last fight, but it's good to see him back doing things in the UFC. So one of those two fights probably on the UFC card. And again, the reason why the UFC card is way better than any other card this weekend.
Well, that will do it for this round. A lot to think about here. A lot of moving pieces. The volcano erupted a little bit, but wasn't like a crazy eruption. But the main question is, will we see a knockout round after what we just witnessed? The point for round four goes to... The answer is... Yes, we will see a knockout round. Jed Meshew ties it up for his team. How fitting for a contest like this. So this is going to be a little interesting. All right.
Oh, man.
So for those unfamiliar with the knockout round, we will ask one question. It's going to be the same question for everybody. And each of these wonderful competitors will have a chance to respond. But here's where things get interesting. One person from each team will give their initial response. The tag team partner can either agree with their teammate's answer and expound further. They could put their partner over, so to speak, or they can completely go against them and trash their answer, if you will, and give their own thoughts on this question. So four responses, 1 minute apiece. Neither person knows what this question is. Once it's done, with the help of the live studio audience, we will turn it on over to the honorable judge, E. Casey Lydon, to rule in favor of the team maybe of Jed and Nanda or the team of Jose and Sean. So to determine our order, Jed, I think I'm the only person who actually, I think you're the only person I told this to. So you already have a pen and paper ready. So Jose or Sean, whoever has a pen and a piece of paper handy, grab it.
What? Who still uses pen and paper? I don't have any of that. Anywhere near me.
I got you, dog. I got you.
Come on, bro.
I got you.
I haven't written anything on a piece of paper in quite a long time.
At least you can read English. I can't say the same for my opponent, Jed.
Okay, so I'm now a Skype symbol, but I can see what's happening right now.
Hey, I can walk down to a Kinko's and print out a fake degree too and hang it on my wall.
Listen, it is my lifelong dream. I'm thrilled to be working here at MMA Fighting, but my lifelong dream is to be a game show host. So I'm trying to like insert a little bit of game show host idness, if you will, into this. So to determine who's going to go first, we need each team to bring one person to the table. We have a little Price is Right action. It's going to be Jed versus Jose. We're going to combine a little MMA trivia into this. So Jose and Jed, I'm going to ask you this question. You have 10 seconds to write down a number.
What?
What's going on?
You won't get it right. Don't worry about it.
You're doing great, Mike.
Jose and Jed, just for you, okay? I'm going to ask this question. You have 10 seconds to write down a number. You're not going to get it right unless you're just ridiculous. But the closest to the number will get the champion's prerogative.
Without going over? Is this real Price is Right or is this fake Price is Right, Mike?
Whoever's the closest to the number. Whoever's the closest to the number.
So fake Price is Right. All right.
Okay. Esk. So Max Holloway has had 24 fights in his UFC career. How many significant strikes has Max Holloway landed in his UFC career?
I was going to cheat and send it to you, Jose, but I can't.
10 seconds, go.
Significant?
Yep.
Jesus, he had like 7,000 in his last fight.
I'm ready.
4, 3, 2, 1. Time is up. Jose, let's see. What do you got?
I wrote 784.
784. Jed Meshew.
4,081.
Yeah, it's got to be way more than 700.
My pen wasn't working.
Probably somewhere in the middle. I'm going to go again.
It's got to be four figures minimum.
So Jed barely wins.
Yeah.
Way over. The correct answer is 2,618. Nearly a fifth of those happened in the fight against Calvin Kattar.
That is a lot closer than I thought.
Yeah. So with that, Jed, you get the champion's prerogative. Do you want to go first? You want to pass this question on over to your opponents?
We're definitely passing because this is chaos, and I don't know. We need time to be prepared.
Yes. We like to call him a coward by not going first. Anyway, hit me with a question.
All right, so Jose, you're going to go first. You'll have a minute, and then Sean El-Shadi will also have a minute to answer. He could either expound on what you said, or he can go his own direction. So here's the question. We're past the midway point of the year. Every year, as you know, Jose, we have our list of awards we like to give out, the blank of the year, over at MMAfighting.com. So put your thinking cap on, because the most contentious category of 2020 was the breakout fighter of the year. It was a two-horse race between Khamzat Chimaev, who won the award ultimately, and Kevin Holland, who finished second. So the question is, Jose, thus far in 2021, who is your breakout fighter of the year in the world of mixed martial arts? That is quite the question. We have 1 minute on the clock. Your time starts now.
In terms of the breakout fighter of the year, I'm going to phrase it in the sense that the reception that this individual got completely caught me off guard. Now, he's been in the UFC for a while, and he was even on The Ultimate Fighter, but the reaction that Brandon Moreno got in Arizona was as if he was fighting in Mexico. The only fighter, I think, the entire week that got more standing ovations than Brandon Moreno was Nate Diaz. So he was the lowest ranked fighter on The Ultimate Fighter. Like, he was the 16 out of 16 fighter in The Ultimate Fighter. He gets called back to fight a UFC vet on short notice, wins, and he racks on a couple more wins and losses, gets cut, comes back, crawls himself back to the top, and is now the champion of the flyweight division. So my answer is Brandon Moreno. He got the biggest pops in front of a crowd. He's probably one of the bigger nerds. I mean, the dude collects Funko Pops for a living, and I hate Funko Pops, and I think that it's absolutely adorable. So the fact that we are talking about Brandon Moreno, the Funko Pop collector, is the champion of the world, my answer is Brandon Moreno.
All right. There we go. We bring in Sean El-Shadi. I'm still a Skype. Oh, here I am. Hey, welcome back, Mike. All right, Sean, you get a minute. You can either build upon that if you agree with Jose, or you can give your own thoughts on this. Breakout fighter of the year thus far in 2021, and go.
That was tremendous. I mean, I was going to say Jiří Prochazka because of what we saw with the ridiculousness and the top knot and everything. But I mean, I have to agree with Jose. Brandon Moreno, man, I was there in Phoenix with Jose, and I honestly wouldn't have believed it had I not been there to see it. The reaction that this guy got from the Phoenix populace all week, it was unreal. He was treated and received like an absolute superstar. Brandon Moreno, the guy who was number 16 out of 16 on his tough season, the guy who was cut from the UFC just a few years ago, the guy who was an underdog in pretty much every single one of his major fights in the UFC. How is this eternal underdog all of a sudden now the UFC champion? This is not something that I think anyone ever really actually thought would come true. Dude loves Legos. He's living his dream, going to Legoland and living it up large. He's probably going to get his own Lego figure. All of Tijuana, Mexico, there's murals everywhere for him. It's crazy. The whole world is celebrating Brandon Moreno. No one ever saw this coming. We thought maybe he'd be a fun fighter who could maybe get, you know, his name into contention at some point. No one ever thought he'd be a champion. It's absolutely Brandon Moreno, and there's no other correct answer.
Okay. Jed is already shaking his head, so that is going to be a good sign. So, Jed, do you want to go first?
Yeah, on this one? I got this, and then Nanda can just come in over the top, put him away.
Okay, so Jose and Sean are going with the assassin baby, Brandon Moreno. What say you? Breakout fighter of the year thus far in 2021. 1 minute on the clock starts now.
First, shouts to Al-Shadi for his unending love of Yuri Prochazka. I knew he would say that if he was given the choice. I'm not here to disparage Brandon Moreno. Brandon Moreno's dope. His win was super sick. He obviously has got something going. He's still a flyweight, so nobody cares about him in a broader sense. The only correct answer is Kamaru Usman. Now, last year, Mike, we talked on the show about
Kamaru Usman. Fighter of the year.
Let me talk. I got a minute. Kamaru Usman, last year, awful performance against Jorge Masvidal. He was the least excited fighter. Somehow he's got two
the worst answer
super dope wins this year, and he is now from good welterweight to legitimately in the greatest welterweight of all time conversation. The UFC started pushing that narrative. He blew the doors off Gilbert Burns and then knocked Jorge Masvidal out. That's not a thing that happens. This is a dude who, again, last year he was a good champion that no one cared about. Now he is a star. He is obviously the breakout fighter this year if you're talking about where he was to where he ended.
Oh, let me just God. Say that. That,
that
guy
was
just
so
picked,
funny.
That guy just
that was so funny.
More breakout fighter of the year, someone who was already a UFC champion for 2 years at the start of this year.
Yeah.
That is not what that category means, my friend.
That category means whatever I want it to mean, and it means he – look, Brandon Moreno is a champion.
The worst answer I've ever seen.
Unquestionably, he went from not champion to champion. But Kamaru Usman went from nobody gave a shit about to a guy that we're starting to call the GOAT. Like, that is the biggest jump anybody's had in the
last. Jed, I take back everything I said. You're a funny guy.
Okay,
all right. Hang on a second. I will say this. I will say this for Jed. That is a very open-ended question. You can look at it however and through whatever lens you want. And that was the biggest point of contention with this freaking award last year was Khamzat, a guy that nobody knew, became a star, even though he didn't really beat anybody of significance. And then you have Kevin Holland, who had 5 wins, but people knew who he was. So it's just like, how do you define it? That's how you define it. And I respect that, Jed. I don't know if Casey will respect that, but I respect it. I have nothing to do with the fight.
The UFC champion of 2 years suddenly became the breakout fighter of the
year. There's a lot of talking when it's not their turn, Mike. My teammate hadn't even gotten a shot yet.
I know, but now she gets a shot.
Brandon's second run in the UFC by those standards too. Like he's not in the same like category as Chimaev, as in he's just a brand new face. And this is not me hating on Brandon Moreno, but I'm not. I'll have my minute, so I don't want.
Yes, you will have your minute. You will have your minute, and this is why this is why I picked this question, because this is awesome. This is chaos, and this is the way they end the program. So Fernanda, we leave it on to you, the married wisdom of Fernanda Pratis. 1 minute on the clock.
I'll preface this by saying I hate this type of question, because whenever I have to write about it, I like do a lot of research. Like I'm that kind of person. I don't think on my feet. But I want female representation here. And I'm gonna go with one that will be also met with protest, but I will explain. I'm gonna go with Kayla Harrison. Because Kayla Harrison obviously has had like one fight this year. She's having her second fight for PFL tomorrow. So it's not like she's fought a bunch. But I say that 2021 is the year that we started talking about Kayla Harrison in the same realm as Amanda Nunes and Cyborg. Right before that, we were curious. We were intrigued. We knew that she had all this athletic prowess. But, you know, her competition had an
Granted, still kind of hasn't been at the level that we can really test it. But I think that 2021 is the year we started seriously putting her in those conversations, seriously putting her against the proven best female MMA fighters in the world. And for that, for now, and this might age horribly tomorrow, for now, I am putting Kayla Harrison as my breakout fighter of 2021.
Good answer. Good answer.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Chad. I love the encouragement.
I'm feeling like Richard Dawson right now, just listening to Family Feud. Good answers. Good answers. So, wow. A lot to digest there. Three different answers. We have two for Brandon
Moreno. But only one right one.
From the blue corner. And then
I just want to leave my love for Brandon Moreno expressed too, because we all did. I love him. He's amazing. But
hey, Sean, how many UFC champions has Mexico, an entire nation, had until UFC 263?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think they've had any
champion,
until.
But not that Brandon Moreno did. That's different.
It's almost
like someone new has become an international superstar over the course of the past 5 months.
Wow. Had already superstar. Made him a star. He had already broken out.
Or is that just
he just didn't have the title.
I have no idea what everybody just said.
I call him a superstar. We have no indication that he's actually a superstar.
I'm just telling you, Jose and I were here for that arena. If they do any sort of show in Arizona again or Mexico or wherever, that's going to sell out very, very fast. And Brandon Moreno is going to be received like a star.
I remember all the shows they did in Cleveland with Stipe after he blew the doors off there as well. You can definitely trust the UFC not to screw that dog.
Stipe, the one that hates Dana White?
Yeah, that
I'm my argument is just that the breakout champion and breakout star and breakout fighter, that's my whole conversation, because I would argue that Brandon had already, like, his stock had already risen incredibly after the first fight with Davison, and he now became champion. So just throwing it out there for the audience to consider.
We had foot stomped Usman, and now he's the GOAT over GSP. That seems like a bigger jump to me. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right.
Let's all just agree that Jed objectively has the worst answer here.
Yeah, obviously.
No.
Okay. There's only one person that can decide that, and that is the man with the baddest stash in MMA media, the Honorable Judge E. Casey Lydon. I will say the only reason I only let this chaos go on for so long so Casey can gather his thoughts, maybe get the opinions of the live studio audience. Just a reminder. We will have our preview show for UFC Vegas 30 coming up tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. We will have Bellator coverage, PFL coverage. We will have UFC Vegas 30 coverage. We'll have your People's Pre-Fight show 30 minutes before UFC Vegas 30, which is an early start time, by the way. So the pre-fight show is going to kick off at 12:30 Eastern, which is just tremendous. I love that very much. But Casey, history being made right now. Who is the first ever... You know what? It's my show. Screw it. Who is the first ever Between the Links Tag Team Champions of the World?
Is Jed holding up a black power fist? What is happening?
It's a one.
Oh, I can't. Your fingers were cut off.
I had the two one. As a Brazilian, I feel like I have to, even though I'm not religious, I feel like my Brazilian is asked that I thank Jesus for whatever happened.
We can't hear Casey.
I'm here. Yeah, I'm listening.
What's
to
happening?
You. I mean, the minute was over a while back. I don't know why you're still talking. But I made my decision. Fine arguments for breakout fighter of the year, but the winner for the first ever tag team Between the Links champion is the red corner, Jed Meshew.
Whoa!
And Nanda Brandes.
Woo! Let's go, Nanda.
Okay, I have to know why, Casey. I have to know why.
I think Nanda said it. Breakout fighter. If Brandon Moreno and Figueiredo had fought in that first fight, say January 2nd, then maybe I could count that. But Brandon Moreno was already a really good flyweight, number two flyweight, and he won the championship. What Jed said, though, sold me. Kamaru Usman was the most boring welterweight champion maybe ever. And two fights after two spectacular victories and destroying Masvidal, he's maybe one win away from considered the GOAT, or one or two wins away from the GOAT. And I mean, you said, you know, the whole, you know, he'll do great in Mexico. Well, if they took Usman to Africa, anywhere Nigeria, he'll do just as good. So I went with Usman for where he started and where he is.
That's
ridiculous.
No, it's not, man.
No, Sean, you can't argue with Casey. You're gonna get just as far as arguing with Jed. They're gonna
I went into this thinking when I heard the question, I was like, oh, Brandon Moreno, absolutely.
I'm sure you did.
But Jed sold it. Jed made a better argument.
Let me just say, I thought we were gonna be on the precipice of the same, literally back to back years around the same time. Kamaru Usman being potentially one of the worst answers in the history of the program. But Jed did a good job selling it. AK Lee said Kamaru Usman was the fighter of the year last year at this exact same time last year, and is one of the worst answers in the history of the show. He still gets beat up about that.
And answer. That's why Kamaru Usman is the breakout fighter, because it was a horrible answer by AK, because Kamaru Usman was not, I don't know what you want to call it, a star. He is a star now. Brandon Moreno is on his way to becoming a star.
Right, we will get the thoughts of Sean and Jose in a matter of moments, but the Red Corner gets to say their piece first. Congratulations to Jed and Fernanda, the first ever Between the Links tag team champions of the world. Jed, you get 30 seconds to say whatever it is you want, and then Fernanda, you will also get 30 seconds.
You know, I'm just basking in the glory of this win. You all thought that I was insane for Usman, and clearly I was correct. And I got to throw a shout out to my tag team partner, because I think she gives me a much, much needed, takes the edge off, makes me a little more palatable, helps some of my arguments. We knew this was going to be a dominant tag team, and this is just the first of many.
Fernanda.
Yeah, I agree. I've got to be honest. The first time I was on the show, I felt a little robbed, and I think the internet kind of agreed with me, but like the entirety of the internet. But I also knew I had a worthy opponent, and I was on board with the tag team because I felt like I said, his reckless energy could really match my sort of more cautious, cowardly, you could say, take on things. So I feel like this was a great team. I'm really happy with our performance tonight.
I thought Fernanda was verbally swinging the chair at Jed's back for a second there, but you turned it around. No. And
nothing but respect here, Mike.
Now, yeah, exactly. Like, this is
all right. Let's hear from the blue
team,
corner.
A strong team.
Let's hear from the blue corner. Let's get Jose and Sean up there. I have to hear what Sean has to say, because the look on his face when he actually like digested this decision, I have to hear.
This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. Casey, I've known you forever. You have a lot of bad opinions. Like, that's just what it is. We have a person with bad opinions telling someone else with bad opinions that he has great opinions. Like, sure, I guess the guy that was 12-0 coming into 2021 and was a champion for 2 years and was already a top five welterweight of all time. Oh yeah, sure. Somehow he's the breakout fighter of the year. Yeah, go ahead and book that Usman Wonder Boy fight, and then we'll see how big of a superstar Usman is with all the million pay-per-views that's gonna sell. It's ridiculous.
Oh, and Brandon Moreno versus who? What?
Dude, who believed Brandon Moreno coming into 2021? Everyone called that a fluke. Stevenson Figueiredo would have won had he not decided to do a couple fouls in that fight. Like, no one was believing in Brandon Moreno coming into that.
I'm sorry, was the question the upset of the year? Was it the upset of the year?
Was it just the UFC champion of the year who slightly became more popular? What are we talking about?
Slightly? Oh, man. Jed.
Usman would outsell Moreno by like 400,000 people. What are we talking
about? Usman would. Yeah, but Usman's still not like the five most popular champion in the
sport. Here's what I'll say. Sean, Casey was always going to pick the incorrect answer. So the fact that we were said that we were wrong is a good, like, that is a good, like, you've been at The Athletic for a couple of years. You don't, like, Casey's been doing the preview and the post fight shows and everything. And as you said, like, he's, as Mike said, what did you say to Casey at a post show last week? What did we call him? A contrarian. So, of course,
the one right answer
is going to, like, this is like, let's not forget, Casey thought Loma Luke Boone deserved a performance bonus for a decision win on a card with like three knockouts and a submission. He said that Verna Jandiroba deserved a performance bonus. Even Mike was like, why? Like, we get it. We get it.
Oh,
like,
the woman that broke Murata's arm?
Case, you can interrupt. You can interrupt in a second. I understand that's the game, but right now, the losers salt can have their time.
Salty. I'm not.
As soon as Jed said Kamara, I'm like, oh, Casey's going to pick that answer. Like, I knew that would come.
Objectively the right answer.
The second Jed said Kamara, and I'm like, oh, Casey's picking that.
I still think that Kayla fits the criteria better, but you know, I'm just gonna throw it out there. I still think we would have won with either answer.
And Nanda, came with two fighters. That was brilliant. Smart.
Kayla Harrison is 1-0 with a win over Marina Moraes in
Shot.
It's fine.
Think about what I said like 5 seconds ago. Wrong answer is gonna be fixed. We get it.
It's okay.
I mean, even Esther Lynn in the comment section was like, "Oh, Jose's the right answer." I'm like, "Yeah, well, I'm not getting. Can't stop picking that one."
Yeah, that was until Esther heard my correct answer.
We're talking about Esther Lynn. Oh wait, no, this is Esther Lynn. Look.
I can't read it. What is she saying? I can't. It doesn't appear to me.
Jed and Nanda had better formed arguments behind more difficult fighters to make. I can't see the bottom of that, but it is the iconic voice, so it must have been something. So there you go.
What degree of difficulty you guys went with? That's just going to kill you every time.
So, well, listen.
It's all love. I still love all of you. I just hope that this is known, okay? That this doesn't cause a rift in our beautiful friendship, because I love you all.
Listen, the only rift it's going to cause is Sean and Jose never wanting to come on the show again.
You're welcome, viewers.
It's going to have to be like me and Jed forever. Yeah,
here's,
like,
Sean, here's how, next time you're on, here's what's going to happen. You're going to win the first round, lose the second, rinse and repeat, and then in the final round, you're going to pick Jir Prochazka, Verna Jandiroba as the breakout and fighters of 2021, guaranteed victory. Oh, and throw Manel Cape in there too, just for the and you are golden, winning every single Between the Links.
You should definitely listen to Jose because he's won a lot of Between the Links against me.
Yeah, you know the only one I won is when I brought up Verna Jandiroba and I got the final point right. So yes, the math is sound.
The system is rigged. That's what you're saying, Jose. That's a serious accusation.
Hey, bro, the system was rigged last week when Sean came in to guest judge and told me. That was when the system was rigged.
Yeah, don't forget that, Sean. You had
you invited me, Casey. You knew what was going to happen.
I trusted you. I trusted you.
Okay. We've gone like 8 minutes past the allotted time here. This is great stuff, by the way. And, I want to thank you all for watching and tuning in to this craziness that is BTL Tag Team Championship match number one. Congratulations to Jed and Fernanda. Thank you, Jose and Sean. Thank you to E. Chris Lee, Casey Lydon for his decision. Until next week, everybody. I am Mike Heck. We'll see you back here Between the Links. Good night, everybody. The iconic voice of Esther Lynn may or may not take you out of here.
Suns in four.
Suns in four.
Suns in four.
Hawks in six.
I can go with that.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work.
Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prof G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.